Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 502 of the JV Club with my fabulous guest, Margot Donahue. She is a woman after my own heart. I mean, listen, she's got a book out. She's got Filmed in Brooklyn, I should say, is the name of the book. She's got numerous podcasts, and we had a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. We recorded this before Sketchfest, and I am recording this intro on the last day of Sketchfest. So for those of you who came out to see shows, thank you so much for supporting our festival. It's been really an emotional and wonderful, heartening thing to be back in San Francisco producing comedy. So love you guys and enjoy this episode with Margot. All right, let's take a moment to pat ourselves on the back, celebrate and enjoy the fact that we are finally doing this interview. I'm so sorry that I had to reschedule last week because of my cold. I still have some traces. Like what I'm hoping won't happen is the post-nasal drip won't kick in halfway through, where all of a sudden I sort of sound like this. There's nothing I can do about it because it's not like... You can't, it's so far back there that you're like, well, this is my life now. I'm very hopeful of that.
Did you have COVID or no?
I didn't have COVID. I just had a bad cold. I cannot tell you how many COVID tests I went through that I now wish I would have just trusted the first couple and been like, no, I have been reading that there is plenty of stuff going around that's not COVID. Why am I spending all this money getting COVID tests? Because I was so paranoid that I was going to, you know, have it and then like get people sick even after like a normal cold would be over, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I had the same thing that happened in July. There was something that went around and everybody kept saying that it must be COVID. I'm like, I test myself like twice a day, like at some point. But yeah.
So all other germs are having a field day right now. I think is what we've discovered, that germs are just like, woo!
We're all plague rats.
It's a wild, wild west. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. How were your holidays?
It was really nice. I actually got away for the first time. I went to Chicago for a wedding last...
Nice.
Yeah, a little bit ago, but I went to Provincetown for... I don't know if you've ever been there. It's just next to Cape Cod. Oh, my God. I used to go all the time when I was a kid to Cape Cod. That was like my favorite place. And so I decided just me, myself, and I rented a room in this really cute inn called the Land's End Inn. It had the sunrise room, which guess what? You could see the sunrise. It was pretty damn special.
That's wonderful.
It was great. It was so needed. It was really cold. I know you're out in California.
Yeah.
But right by the water on the East Coast.
Was this during the big winter storm, or this was pre that?
Pre-storm.
Okay.
Pre-winter storm. And I went because I had a meeting with an astrologist and she said,
love everything I'm hearing.
She just said, it's time. I can feel your energy. You need to get out of that apartment. You need to go away for a few days, like a real place. And I said, well, maybe I'll go to DC or whatever. She's like, no, no more cities.
Huh?
Go to the beach.
Yep.
And it cured whatever was ailing me.
How wonderful is that?
Yeah.
My association with Cape Cod, truly, because it was the original association, and I haven't had a ton of conversations about Cape Cod that would even really supersede this experience, is just the movie Splash. And
oh my gosh, yes. I haven't seen that in a while.
I haven't either, but I was definitely very, very, very into that movie when I was little. And
did you want to be a mermaid?
I definitely wanted to be a mermaid. And for sure, the fact that she rescues him off. Like, I remember that so clearly. Like, no, when he was a kid, it was Cape Cod where he fell into the water and she saved his life. So that's what I think of. I think of Cape Cod and I think of mermaids and I guess Daryl Hannah.
I think of John Candy. I think he's so funny in that movie.
So great in that. And Eugene Levy in that movie.
At least once a week, I'm yelling out, there's a system on the desk, because my desk is always... goddamn nightmare. I just say to myself, I know where things are.
Okay, so you did not meet any mermaids. I'm still okay with it. I don't know that it was a season for mermaids anyway, because I do feel that must have been perhaps in the summer. But that's where my memory of Splash is ending on me, is that I don't think it was the middle of winter, but maybe I'm wrong.
No.
And so you said that you used to go there all the time as a kid. Where were you growing up? That it was it close by or was it a trek?
Long Island. I'm a Long Island kid.
You're a Long Island.
Yeah. And my dad worked for IBM, which at the time meant I've been moved. That's what we used to say to each other. Ha ha. I get along with Army brats really well because you move every few years. When we lived in New York and Long Island, my dad's boss had a vacation home there and everybody got to spend a week.
Oh, nice.
He was a really good boss to my dad.
And, no kidding. That's great.
Which was great. And I've just always, I like the seashore. I love like Jaws. I like that whole Amityville thing. Like, there's this very famous murder that happened. It was Krista Washington, I think is her name. She was a fashion writer.
Mm-hmm.
And she got sick of the New York scene, the dating scene, whatever. She was really gorgeous. Worked in Paris for a while, like a really cool chick. And she just moves to not even Cape Cod, but outside of Cape Cod, like in between Cape Cod and Provincetown.
Oh, wow.
And got this little house. And it was, and everybody was like, all of her friends, what are you doing? You're leaving New York and you're going to this place. And I'm just like, oh my God, that sounds like the dream. Like, in a way, it's just very gothic to me.
Absolutely. Well, wait now, because she did end up getting murdered. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. I'm sorry. I buried the lead there, didn't I? Yikes.
That might be why people are leaning harder into a Margot, why would you do that?
I know.
This cost her life. But I'm not saying I'm against it. But what I feel sounds familiar, but I also know that there was so many like lost girls, like the sort of like some unsolved murders on the East Coast in that general larger area. So maybe I'm lumping that in.
Well, she was a single mother, and it turns out she had an affair with somebody in town. He was like a fisherman. I mean, this is all like,
Why haven't we seen this movie? Or
right.
Movie that's out there,
I think it's been out there.
Yeah.
But then it turns out it was somebody who like worked for the city, but it took years to get DNA. They had to literally get DNA from every single person, and it was off season. So there's only a few, you know, the guy's in jail. So they did catch the person that did
it.
And it's a tragedy. I've always like thought, like, I can imagine like you lived in Paris, you lived in New York, and you're kind of like, I want the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you were you in Long Island? Oh my God, now I'm doing it.
Oh, don't.
I said Long Island. Oh my God. Oh, that's so
embarrassing. One of us.
So embarrassed. I can't believe that was on accident. Were you there for high school or was that part of that? Was that a stop along the IBM relocation plan?
It was the first stop, and it was a great stop. I still love it there because you're like right by the city and the beach. Like it's perfect. It's very Great Gatsby-ish. We were in Glen Cove. Then we lived in Pennsylvania, which was also really nice. We were out by Westchester, which is where QVC is now.
Okay.
When I was a kid, there was nothing. It was like dirt bikes and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we lived in Ridgewood, New Jersey, which was, it's a very rich kid, like a very John Hughes rich kids, kind of rich white Republican kids. And then that my parents settled in California, so I went to San Jose State.
Okay. Okay, so did you get to spend like freshman through senior year at one school, or was there moving in there?
There was moving, and
no wonder you got along with Army brats.
Totally.
That's a tough time to move.
On my 16th birthday, we moved from Pennsylvania to New Jersey. Believe me, I never let my parents forget that.
yeah.
That was a tough one. The movie 16 Candles really got to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, if you're in this sort of homogenous, affluent teenage world, then double so.
Yeah. It was rough because it was like shit kickerville, like in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And then we go to Jersey, and then it was like everyone was like super dressed up to go to school. And it was the fashion show kind of thing.
Yeah. Do you have siblings?
Yeah. I have two brothers and a sister.
Oh, wow. Okay. So everybody was shuffling around.
Yeah, we were pretty close growing up because we just kind of had each other.
Where do you fall in the sequence of kids?
So there was my brother Joe, and then me, and then my sister, and then my brother, my younger brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the high school itself, did it have that sort of cliquish, everyone's dressed up? Was it cliquish, or was it so homogenized that every, like, the whole high school was one click? Like, what it, like, what was it like?
It's so funny because I was listening to your interview before. It was somebody you interviewed just before the holidays, and she said there was like 100 people in her class in her high school or something. There was 1,000 in my senior class. So it was the good thing about it, like, living in Pennsylvania was out kind of in the middle of nowhere and stuff. Jersey, you can hop on the train and be in Manhattan. You can, so there is, there was always that outlet. And it's also like, if you don't fit in with these kids, there's always, there's the theater group. There's like a million, you know, the Ridgewood Players. Our big thing was that Tom Cruise, like, was at the Ridgewood Players for like a week or something in the 80s.
Wait, so was, is that like a community theater within Ridgewood, or that was part of the high school? Okay.
It's all, it's all kind of connected. But yeah, Ridgewood's kind of like a state of mind as well as a place.
I'm like combing through my Rolodex of conversations, and I'm trying to think if Ridgewood has come up before, but I don't think it has. For as many people as I've had from the Jersey and New York areas, I don't think Ridgewood has come up before. And so you know, you definitely name dropped the theater kids. Was that a group that you fell in with, or?
Yeah, it was. I totally fell in with them. I'm trying to think of the guy that was married to, he was in the show I Married a Princess. Casper, Casper Van Dien. Is that his name?
Yeah. Casper went, Van Diem. Yeah.
Van Diem or Van Dien. He's like, he and Robert Sean Leonard are both from Ridgewood. Like, they were, they're like the big stars from there. But I worked the best place. I mean, I did, I was in theater, but my favorite thing was I worked at a Roy Rogers, which don't exist anymore, but it's a fast food place. Are you familiar with them?
I'm not. I mean, I think kinda I've probably like heard of them, but
a lower rent Arby's, if you can picture that.
That's actually a little bit of a struggle because Arby's,
it's pretty.
Arby's isn't that high class.
Oh no. But okay, all the kids, because all the kids were rich at my school, so a lot of them didn't have to work, and my parents were very much like, you know, pull your own weight, you know.
Yep.
And they were right, by the way. They were like, guys, I want to have no money to spend because I wanted guest jeans and cool shit like that.
Yeah.
So I worked at a Roy Rogers, and it was like all the kids from all the different schools, like, we were all misfits. And I think the oldest one of us was like 22. And
we like,
you know, we have like this whole operation going. It was actually really fun. I look upon it fondly.
When you say it was like Arby's, does that mean it was less hamburgers and more like roast beef?
Roast beef sandwiches, fried chicken, biscuits, salad bar.
That sounds like it's checking a lot of fast food boxes that you can't get all in one place. Can you get fried chicken at Arby's? That seems like you rolled in KFC in there.
Yeah, so
which seems like a good idea.
You know, I haven't been to an Arby's in a long time, so I couldn't tell you.
I haven't either. I could not be less of an authority. I do remember my dad getting that sometimes. That was very surprising. When he would come home with Arby's instead of Burger King, that was a very shocking, like, what's going on?
A hot roast beef sandwich is like a pretty special thing.
Yeah.
Once in a while. I mean, I don't know if you're a vegan or not, or like what.
I don't eat beef, but I totally understand the, like, especially the sort of au jus kind of, like, let's just get in there and get messy and really get the sauce and all that kind of stuff. I definitely get that for sure. Okay, and so how much free time did you have if you were working while you were in high school as well? Were you able to go to the movies a bunch? Did you have, like, stuff that, you know, what was your extracurricular, like, stuff of choosing when you had time?
If anything, I was reading Stephen King.
Oh, sure.
I was listening to music. I was really into Van Halen and Stephen King.
That's so American. Isn't that a wonderful American?
Like, I'm so goddamn basic. I mean,
if only you said Bruce Springsteen, because I feel like that's
And I have a friend that's like, has followed Springsteen for like 25 years, like all over the country, and like knows all the peeps and stuff. No, that was my total freaking jam. And then movies. I love movies.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder what that could have led to.
I don't
hands
know.
Together. Okay, so were you going to, like, because I'm so much less like this now, and I sort of miss, I've talked about this on the podcast many times, I miss the feverishness of my teenage years and my very early 20s of, like, when I loved something, I had to, you know what I mean? Like, I just had to eat it like it was a roast beef sandwich for some people. You know, but like I would see a movie several times in the theater. It felt really important to do that. Do you know what I mean? Were you like that?
Yeah, totally. And I remember, like, it was music and movies, and I had a friend that would go into the Village every weekend and go to a record store and, like, listen to records.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I remember he came to school one day, and I said, what'd you listen to over the weekend? And he described Prince, When Doves Cry. Now, this is before it was on the radio. Like, he got, so he was so cool. He just described the song to me in such detail that I remember sitting there, I'm like, I can't wait to go home and turn on this music. Like, because I'm dying. I didn't have a Walkman. I had nothing. Like, just him describing the song and the guitar solo and the blah, blah. It was so amazing.
I'm trying to think if anyone has ever described a song to me.
It's not
without just playing it
often.
For me. Like, I don't think I've ever. There's something so special about that. Like, I'm trying.
It's
of course,
intimate.
I'm sure everyone listening to this is like doing the same thing I am, which is like trying to imagine what that is like, you know, where he's like, okay, at the very beginning.
Oh, my
little like. Was he making noises that would help you along the way? Was he singing snippets of it or anything?
Yeah, Phil was great. He would, because we were both really into 1999, which was the Prince album before this came out. And that was a fucking amazing album. And so I remember him, it's called When Doves Cry. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? He goes, I'm not quite sure. And it just was just like doing the guitar solos and stuff. And this is before the video came out. So we didn't even know, like, any of all that stuff.
Oh, the video was such a big deal. That was definitely played over and over again. Speaking of seeing something many, many, many times.
MTV really was a lot for me, too, because it was, like you said, music. And it was, like, there was no way.
Well, it's like music and movies, right? Because music videos were, like, little films, so many of them at that time. You know, they were so, like, how do we tell the story of, you know?
Yeah, and they were, and they... You know, there's so many bands that I learned through MTV because when they first started, they would just play anything except black people.
Yes.
Let's remember that. They didn't have Michael Jackson until like the mid 80s. But
oh, is that true?
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I'm trying to, because I feel like Michael Jackson was part of my first experience with
MTV.
He was already baked in. So maybe we might have been later adopters because, you know, maybe we didn't get that MTV fast enough in Tucson, Arizona.
It was weird. Also, I want my MTV. There was like kids who didn't have MTV. And so there was that whole freaking campaign about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were stuck. Like, you didn't have MTV. Too bad. And I also was explaining to somebody, talking about Michael Jackson.
I totally forgot about the I Want My MTV campaign. Will you like recap that for people who don't know what we're talking about?
MTV comes out in like 81, 82, and it comes out on these cable stations. And New York City didn't have it. And so, but our cable did. But I had friends in the city that couldn't get it. But there were certain pockets of the country. And then MTV, just once it caught on, everybody wanted a part of it, and they affected everything. Like all the music. Duran Duran would not have had the success they did if they didn't have MTV. And they're talented.
Their look
I love
was such
Duran
a huge
Duran.
Part of it, but
exactly,
yeah, you're so right.
Yeah, and so there was this whole campaign of I want my MTV, and they got all these artists to do it because they were making money because they were all of a sudden getting more popular. And I tried to explain to somebody who's like a lot younger than me. Like 20 years younger than me, about Michael Jackson Thriller. And I said to her, my parents wouldn't get a VCR. We had a VCR, but my dad would hook it up to watch movies because he was worried we would record like Skinamax or something, which he's not wrong.
Yes. Yes. But you toss that in underneath, you tuck it in, which he's not wrong.
Which is not wrong. But I would try to explain to her, like MTV would say, we're going to play Michael Jackson's Thriller every hour on the hour. So it's like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And it was like kids ran home to watch Thriller.
Oh,
because
for
that
sure.
was your only chance.
Oh my God. Well, it was kind of like, I mean, it really was. In some ways, that reminds me more of stuff that happens now than some other things in terms of it being like this thing that's not a movie, kind of like YouTube or something, where it's like this thing that isn't a film is still being treated as if it were, but with a premiere on a channel, I don't know. Yeah, it was just so. It was, and then there was like all the, like, everyone was talking about the making of it. Like, there was as much conversation about John Landis and all of those. Of course, like, saying the
Rick
names
Baker.
John Landis and Michael Jackson together kind of are, you know, that's troublesome to many people. Yes. But yeah, I mean, it was such a big deal. It was such a big deal at the time, for sure.
It was such a status symbol. If you had the Michael Jackson Making of Thriller VHS, which was like $50 or something, it was super expensive.
But you were somebody who was interested in movies. Right. Obviously, your love of that has played out through your career. Were you as fascinated by the process of making movies then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was something that you would really perk up to and be like, oh my God, behind the scenes on all these special effects and like
Rick Baker, who did all the great makeup and I mean, you never get to see that stuff and also see stuff that I care about. You know, I remember seeing like Star Wars a little bit on TV behind the scenes, but nobody really thought people cared. And it's very strange. Like, there was a time when Entertainment Tonight, nobody really cares anymore, but at a time like Entertainment Tonight didn't exist. And then all of a sudden it was like the most important thing. Like, that's where I got my news. That's where I got my behind the scenes stuff.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
All right, wonderfuls, it's time for me to give another shout out to everyone's favorite comedy record label, Blonde Medicine. That's right, this week I'm excited to talk about the debut album from the hilarious and brilliant Joyelle Nicole Johnson called Yell Joy, which I want you to sit with for a second because it's the best name of an album ever. And Joyelle Nicole Johnson's Yell Joy is available to stream everywhere, and you can get it on fun splatter vinyl. Love that. Blonde Medicine has put out all sorts of great albums from folks we all love. Or if you don't know them, you need to know them. Like Kanis Mobley, Subha Agarwal, Anika Dell, Amy Miller, Irene Too. I cannot tell you how many of my favorite comedians are represented on Blonde Medicine's label. They are awesome. You gotta check it out. I love that they're in the vinyl game. Check out blondemedicine.com/maxfun to browse a selection of stand-up LPs and use code JVCLUB at checkout to get 20% off your entire order. blondemedicine.com/maxfun. Use JVCLUB at checkout and get 20% off that order.
Oh, Russ. Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I found you in line.
These clouds are really freaking me out.
I hate having to stand in line. And boy, what a line.
These giraffes do not smell good.
No, they do not. And they have such short necks.
But I'm hearing we need to get on this
arc. We got to get on the arc. It is about to rain. God is about to destroy humanity. Hey, sorry. Are you Noah?
Yeah, I know we look like humans, but we're actually, we're podcasters.
We are podcasters, so it's different.
Have you heard of Ono, Ross, and Carrie?
We investigate spirituality, claims of the paranormal, stuff like that.
And you have a boat and say the world's going to end, so seemed like something for us to check out.
We would love to be on the boat.
We came 2x2.
What do you think?
Ono, Ross, and Carrie, available on MaximumFun.org.
Said that you were really into reading Stephen King books. Does that carry over into like a love of horror films at the same time?
Yes. In fact, a friend of mine, I had like really bad dreams last night, like really, really bad dreams. And I was saying that my friend Sonia, and she, my co-host, and she
Your
said,
co-host, yeah.
And she said, why? And I said, well, I think I watched Resurrection and X, which is like these two very hardcore, like, horror movies that came out in the last year, and I did it last night, like, oh, let's blow deck and then we'll watch these two films about, you know, people being knifed and killing each other.
I've not seen either. When you say hardcore, are they like gory, or are they just super scary, or are they like disturbing?
They're disturbing.
Yeah, and those are my least favorite. Those are the hardest.
Those are hard for
movies.
Me to sit
I tend
through
to
too
just kind of back away from those.
Yeah. X is interesting because Brittany Snow, do you remember her from American Dreams, the TV show?
I do. Yeah.
She plays a porn star in this movie, and it's supposed to take place 1979.
Yes, I saw the trailer for this. Yes.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's like,
love to hear that.
She's amazing. Like, she married some bozo, and he's on this Netflix show, like selling Orange County or whatever, and they got divorced. Uh-huh. I was like, I was feeling bad for her. And then I saw this movie, like, she's fucking amazing. She's going to be fine. She's
That's
really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's worth seeing. I mean, what's ironic about talking about like the quote unquote disturbing horror films is that often that just means that they're the most like real.
Yes.
The most, that's the
anxiety
closest to how
real.
You would actually feel
right
in reality. So it doesn't feel as escapist, but it's also like, I mean, in some cases, it's the most honest form of horror there is because it's fucking existentially awful to imagine horrible things happening to people who don't deserve it or even people who do. But, you know, it sometimes lacks the escapism.
When they're making the right choices and it's still not working out, you know, they're doing everything they can do. Yeah. And it's just sort of like you have to just white knuckle it now and deal with what's going on. It's terrifying.
I mean, I guess I'll probably watch it. I also feel like, and I don't want this to be true. I really don't. But I do feel like. Like with the pandemic and sort of just, you know, the whole global warming thing and stuff, I think I am kind of, I don't know that it's necessarily like a permanent thing at all, but I do feel like, and I think a lot of people are saying the same kind of thing, that I have less of an appetite for being just really horrified by something because maybe I've been too horrified by things lately, but...
Well, I've needed to cleanse my palate, like just, but it's also been like a couple of, you know, it's been a couple of years and I haven't been to a movie theater yet. I'm still like, it's got to be on streaming. I'm still like not comfortable, you know, taking that leap. I mean, I've almost done it for Maverick. I almost did it for the new Black Panther movie. But then part of me was just like, oh, it's going to be out soon enough. And
I
could be home.
And I did. I've been to the movie theater once. I'm not a huge go to the movie theater person necessarily anyway. But it is funny that like all of these movies like Top Gun or like Avatar, like things that have come out that really are everyone's talking about, like, you know, regardless of what you think of the movie, you have to admit, like, this is what movies are meant to be, to see in the theater and stuff. And then what I chose to see was The Triangle of Sadness, which 100% could have been watched at home, like, in terms of, you know.
I don't even know that one. What is that movie?
That's the, Ruben Ostrom, I think, is the director. He did, like, The Square. These are foreign films. And he did, you know what he did that you'll know is, Force Majeure, you know, that they remade into an American movie, but he did the original.
Okay.
Triangle of Sadness is, I'm sure it is up for Academy Awards and stuff, but it's, and there was the young actress who was on it, you may have heard in the news, she like was having really bad stomach cramps, she ended up, this is after the movie had wrapped and everything, and it started with like a headache, and then I think it went to stomach cramps, and then she went to the hospital, and then she passed away, and she
was
30 something, and it was because she was like a latent problem after having been in a car accident many years before and having had to have her intestines like operated on or something, and was one of those like, some kind of parasite got in there, like just one of those shocking sort of like, oh my god, like, you know, not dissimilar from our poor friend the athlete who, you know, just whose heart just stopped on the football field, like
he's getting better.
That's what I just read something about that, but speaking of like things that are disturbing and
and Jeremy Renner,
a tiny horror show. I know,
my parents lived, my sister used to live in Tahoe, my parents lived in Sparks, Nevada, which is I know exactly where he is. I mean, I'm not gonna bother him, but I know that hospital. My mother was very sick and I went to that hospital, but I'm like, oh my god, this poor guy like was just trying to do a nice thing and then run over. I mean, I hope he inherited some Marvel Universe magic in his system, because
I know,
oh my god,
it reminded me of Anton Yelchin. Remember when his car, like,
horrifying.
That was, I couldn't let that go. I mean, I really couldn't let that go. Like, I didn't know him. We have friends in common, but it was again that existential sort of the bleakness of that, of just kind of, you know, sitting with that feeling of like, well, that's not fair. And none of it's fair. You know what I mean? Like, none of it's fair. But the ones that feel so random or feel like this, you know, these things that we've just heard about recently, you and me, as we're recording this, they kind of are they're chilling in a different way somehow because they feel more unusual.
My dad passed away in 2015. Mm. He was at a convention in Provo, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
It was a woodturner's convention. He was really into woodturning. He actually, William H. Macy, like my dad met him at one of those woodturner conventions. Wow. He's like totally into, yeah.
I feel like that happens to a lot of people with woodturning, by the way, and carpentry and stuff. Like people get into it and then they're like, I want to know everything about this and I want to be wonderful at it and I like want the community of it. I totally get
it. Yeah, he was, my dad was a computer guy for years and then he took an early retirement and then he was also an artist. So it's just kind of like it's the specificity of it.
Yeah.
And you take a piece of wood and it can just fall apart in your hands or you can come up with something cool.
Yeah.
And he was like really good at it. Like for Northern Nevada, my dad was like the big deal. Yeah, it was really sad. And, He was in his hotel room and he either just got disoriented because he was just not home or whatever, but he just fell and he hit some furniture.
Oh, Marco.
Yeah. And he just passed away. It was like somebody said like $1 million injury. Like it's because you just go. There's just like.
Yeah. And Bob Saget maybe had
exactly.
something similar.
Yeah. And Bob Saget, everyone's going like, how can you die when this happens? Yes. And I'm like, do you want to speak to me individually? Because I was. Thank you. I mean, I always wanted to talk to his kids or his family just be like, yeah, I know how you feel.
Yes.
Because it's bizarre.
Yes.
But it's like, yeah, life is very, you know, it's not fair. Jesus. It's ephemeral. Yeah. And we have to remember that.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Yeah. But it's hard to hear, like, all those conversations that happen, you know, I lost my mom in 2021, but it was ultimately... and thank you. And likewise, your situation sounds much more just gobsmacking and like, how do I wrap my head around this? Whereas mine was very surprising in some ways, but also like, you know, it was, you know, if it was my mom had dementia, so it was, it didn't feel like she was necessarily close to being gone because she was pretty young when she developed it. But, you know, I was able to, even as it was happening, like that sort of feeling that slides into place that's like she's not in pain anymore or she's not afraid anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that is really a cushion. It truly is. I mean, it's such a cushion. And so when it's something that just comes out of nowhere, I just can't even, I kind of can't imagine.
It's other destabilizing.
Than friends I've lost who've taken their life. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like for a parent, now that I've lost a parent because... Yeah, most of us only have two actual parents. Maybe some of us are blessed enough to have like an amazing extended step family, but it's just different than any other loss I've ever experienced. And it's really, really hard for me to imagine that coming as a complete surprise. So I'm so, so sorry.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry. And then we'll change the subject, but was your mom, how did she... Did she feel like supported and did she have people rally around her and all that?
She did, but
they were still together, I assume.
Oh yeah, they were married. Oh, my parents got married in 1964, and so it was like over 50 years. They were very happy. They were very. She actually, I mean, we all thought like, you know, of the two of them, if Dad had lost Mom instantly, he would not make it because, you know, Mom was much sturdier.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you know, slash stoic. She totally missed him. But then the great thing was that she started traveling because Dad didn't like to travel. So she did things he didn't want to do. And so she was like doing stuff. So that was really good.
That's so good. That's so, so good. Okay. Well, let's get back to you. Let's get back to some teenage moments.
Yes.
Were you dating in high school? What was that world
like
for you?
No. I was so... awkward and shy. Like something happened to me. Like adolescence for me was really, really hard. So I was very awkward and very shy.
Yeah.
Yes. So I wanted boyfriends, but I was like, I didn't know how to do it. Like and guys had crushes on me and would say things and stuff, but I just didn't know how to handle myself. And it took a while. And I remember watching like Sex and the City. I'm like, God, why are these women so good at dating? Like, why isn't it hard for them? Did they ever go through a time where it was rough? You know, that's what I always wonder.
Yeah. And this might be like a real square peg in a round hole, which is an unintentional joke considering that I believe Sarah Jessica Parker was on a show called Square Pegs.
But, she was.
Square peg in a round hole. But do you feel like there was any sort of like, because you were someone who had this wonderful imagination and who did love films and books so much, Do you think that there was, do you put pressure on yourself, like, mm-hmm. that it was supposed to be like that? No, you just didn't feel comfortable with it. It wasn't like you were comparing it to.
No, I wasn't comparing it to, like, you know, some people, like, they want, like, a, like, the Karate Kid romance or something. Uh-huh. Like, so, like, yeah. a Daniel that'll
exactly.
do anything.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I guess that's what I was asking if you had. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that. I was just very awkward and shy. That's, I mean, seriously, I was just gawkward. I don't know what you would, uh-huh. like, say. I was just, you know. But a part of me also, and it's like, I'm single now, it's just like, I like me, and I like, you know, I'm uncomfortable with silence. I mean, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm comfortable in my own life. I tell people, like, I've manifested the life I wanted. Like, I'm in my apartment in Brooklyn. I got my Beatles posters. I'm writing books. I got my cats. Like, I'm just like, this is awesome. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Different.
Absolutely. 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 Okay. And so what were, can you, you mentioned loving, you know, Jaws, what were some other, were there other movies that you would just come back to over and over again? I'm not saying that that was true for you as a teenager, but, like, were there movies as a teen that you were like, yeah, this movie gets me?
God, all of the teen movies in the 80s are kind of like, were genetically designed and engineered for me at the time.
You look
back on it now, like Pretty in Pink, I'm like, oh, that's actually kind of toxic what they're doing. But yeah, I went along with it when I was a kid. I remember, like, I'm a little older, but I remember when E.T. was in the movie theaters and I was, like, obsessed with it and I wanted to watch it all the time. And
yeah, that was when I had to, like, my dad came to understand very early on that I was extremely emotional and I would become hysterical when I was upset about something happening in a movie. So anything that he caught wind of, no matter what age I was, if he had any say in it, if anyone told him at all that there was something sad in it, he'd be like, not going to take Janet to see that in the movie because I'll have to take her out because she'll be sobbing and everyone will be like, what are you doing to that poor child? Did you hit her?
That's so funny because you're an only child, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you grew up in my mom had 4 kids in 6 years. Yeah. We were all around the same age. And it was like one of us had a problem. Like, well, 3/4 rule you out. So you have to leave or deal with it.
I'm sure that's good. I think that's probably way healthier and way better than being so fragile, you know, like to be the kid where there's like, there isn't anybody else.
Yeah.
So how could you ignore, you know,
her
that
problems,
going on,
yeah.
and then that
it's
maybe continues to manifest itself because there's the room to do that. I mean, I think that's a really good point.
I don't know.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the first time I ever actually made it through E.T., and it may have been when I was adult.
I
would just turn it off when he started getting sick. I'd be like, I can't do this.
I remember thinking, like, this is really sad. Like, I'm a little kid and they're throwing a lot of sadness at me, but he lives. Like, E.T.'s okay.
I know. Absolutely. There's something about, and it's, yeah, there's, and it, I think it would even happen with stuff that I had seen where you know the outcome. And that's why I guess a mark of a great movie is that, you know, even though you know it's going to turn out okay, having to get through that hard part can feel so real and that it can feel that way over and over again is such a high compliment to a good movie, you know?
I think Spielberg's great. I mean, some people, I don't know, people have their own opinions about it, but I was talking about Spielberg with somebody who's a total movie fan and she's like, I just could never sit through E.T. and that, she was like an adult when she first watched it. And she's just, it's just too sad and it's too, I don't know, kids deal with sadness. Kids deal with a lot of things. And I think I found that therapeutic in a way.
Yeah.
But I used to like ride my bike and go to the theater like every weekend and I'd see just about anything. I mean, I just like the whole experience.
And at that time in your life, did you associate your passion and your love and enjoyment of film and storytelling? Was that something that you were also sort of projecting into the idea of like, when I grow up, I want to blank? Or because for some of us, like the thing that was fun and the idea of having a grown up job, like didn't fuse until later.
I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know. I always wanted to write, but I didn't know what kind of writing I wanted to do. And I didn't know about it's hard work. You have to be very disciplined. It's all kinds of stuff. And so, and also you have to make money. I mean, I don't come from a money tree. I mean, I had to like get a job after college, and some of us have to like, you got to work until you find what it is. But it all kind of like coalesced together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You say you knew you enjoyed writing. Did you do like newspaper kind of stuff? I end up with a lot of guests who were on the school newspaper, and again, that's a thing that just never would have occurred to me.
I was in the school newspaper.
There it is. Bravo.
I did the school newspaper, and then I did the underground paper that people, you know, gave to each other as seniors. That was a thing.
Oh, that's cool. Now that's cool.
Yeah. I was like, I should have done a fanzine or something. I should have like thought of a way to like monetize it. But I was totally into the school paper. And
was the content like of the sort of more underground paper?
It was more of like, it was called the Maroons. That was like our, the Maroons is our label. Sorry, that's RHS. And I forget what it was called. I had it in my yearbook. I showed it to somebody the other day. But it's just sort of like, isn't this teacher kind of a weird molester type? And isn't this lady?
Wait, are you saying like creep is basically like
yes. There's so many...
That's amazing.
So many weird things teachers, and I'm not going to shit on teachers too much here because they have the toughest job. I have a lot of friends that are teachers and stuff like that. But just as a young woman in the 80s going to school, thinking back on like how some men behaved to girls like way more outgoing than I am and
open
to that kind of attention, I'm like, holy shit. It was like the Wild West. They could just say just about anything.
I guess so.
Anything.
That's amazing. Do you find yourself like when you're doing the stuff that you do now, are you, because, and of course I'm going to ask this because I have such a fascination with adolescence and like I feel like there's so much stuff I can draw a straight line to from back then. Do you feel yourself kind of like thinking about that those parallels or thinking about that stuff?
Oh yeah, let me tell you a story.
That's so wild. Yeah, please.
Okay, so my sister and I, my whole family, we lived in Pennsylvania, right? And I said Westchester, and at the time it was like middle of nowhere. So we took the bus to school. And there was a bus driver named Dave, and Dave would play cool music, and Dave would talk to everybody, and Dave like knew everybody's names, and Dave, I'm sure, you know, like, not like Otto exactly, but Otto adjacent, you know.
Thank you, because that's absolutely what I was thinking of, as you've been through this before, I'm sure.
Yes. And my parents worked in Philly, and so it took them a while to get home. We were alone a lot. This is also, that's just kind of like kids in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, like, for sure.
We're latchkey kids. So my aunt was visiting from Long Island and staying with us. She was much older. She had like hip replacement or something. And it was like President's Day. It was a day off of school, but my parents were at work.
Yeah.
And my sister and I, all of a sudden there's a ring at the door. Dave was at the door and he brought Valentine's for me and my sister. I'm like 12, maybe, and she's 10. And then he came into the house and he was like just talking to us for like an hour. And then my aunt just kept giving him the stink eye. And I just had no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
And my sister and I had a conversation about this like a year or so ago. Like, do you remember the time Dave came over? And she's like, yeah, like, what if she wasn't there? What was Dave up to?
Right.
Because my brothers were out doing something. Like, their neighbors aren't close by. And so when people wonder, like, how groomers groom, like, it's not drag queens, y'all. It's not people with a big look at me sign, you know?
Right.
It's people they see every day.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was a close call.
Wow.
Fucking call. And it was like, and it took me years. And it's like, you normalize it in your head. Like you kind of.
Oh, 100%.
You know, because he never did anything like that again. And.
Yeah.
But.
But you say when it was happening. You didn't necessarily have a gut check feeling then as a kid of like, this feels weird.
No, my survival instincts were sort of more of along the lines of being, you know, this is how they pick people. I was awkward. I was shy. Right. You know, we were still kind of new kids in the neighborhood. We were lonely. Yeah. And here's somebody who's cool, who's paying attention. It was like, it just checks those boxes and you're sort of like, yeah. Oh, okay. It's years yeah. and years later, you go, oh my God.
I'm afraid there may be, to your point, like even more of those in my past than I have the capacity to remember yeah. at this point. You know what I mean? Which is a bummer because, you know, I feel so, to be as darkly cynical as I feel sometimes and then still be so optimistic and continue to want to believe the best about people is like, that's a tough row to hoe if you yeah. are kind of straddling both of those all the time. And, you know, like my first instinct, I'm not proud of this at all, but when you're telling the story, my first instinct was to be like, maybe he was giving every kid a Valentine. Yeah. Like, maybe he was just really nice. And like, you know, I'm
like, exactly.
Janet, can it be super creepy and wrong that he brought two tiny kids Valentine's and wanted to come inside and like hang out?
We weren't taught.
Why am I making excuses otherwise. Now? It didn't even happen to me. Like, what is wrong with me?
Right. But it's like, we weren't, you're not taught otherwise. And it wasn't yeah. like, years later, I used to teach fitness at the Y. I was a fitness instructor. And because it's the YMCA and they have kids and kids camps and stuff like that, you have to take all these courses. Like, and it's CPR and safety, but it's also about yeah. grooming and pedophiles. And yeah. And it's yeah. you just hear like what people do to get close to a family yeah. and they can be a man or a woman. It could be yeah. somebody like really good looking and accomplished as you think like, well, yeah. this person doesn't have to, you know, they can yeah. attract people in their lives easily. But
don't you think it's sad? I mean, look, I don't have kids, but I love my friends' kids.
Yeah.
And I promise everyone, I do not have an interest in kids above and beyond, like, mm-mm. loving being around them and being the fun aunt. And I'm so, like, God forbid someone, you know, someone ruins it for those of us who are like...
Yeah, yeah.
But I just want to be a good aunt. Like, yeah. I just, like, I feel like one of the kids, but it's not because I want to, like, take advantage of anybody.
No, I'm the same way. I love you my friends' know? Kids. Yeah. And
so
I was,
dark.
When I was in Chicago, I actually performed a wedding and for two friends of mine. And I even told their parents, like, I know this is your child, but these are my kids.
Yeah, yeah,
they're
exactly.
my kids.
Exactly.
I mean, but
exactly.
I would never hurt anybody. But like,
yeah,
that's a whole other topic. But yeah, it was one of those things. Like, I mean, honest to God, like I was in my 40s, and all of a sudden I was like, wait, that was fucked up. Like,
yeah,
you know what happened to that guy? You know,
I'm glad that you had your sister to once again
to back
sort of
me
like,
up. What if I was alone? Because then I feel like, well, maybe it didn't happen.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Oh my gosh, hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture trivia podcast, Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play games like motivational speeches. It goes a little like this. Riley, give us an improvised motivational speech on why people should listen and subscribe to Troubled Waters.
I look around this ad and I see a lot of potential to listen to comedians such as Jackie Johnson and Josh Gondelman, and they need you to get out there and listen to them attempt to figure out sound rebus clues or determine if something is a Game of Thrones character or a city in Wales.
I have chills. I'm going to give you 15 points. All that and so much more on Troubled Waters. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you choose to listen to podcasts.
I'm going to get into this MASH game with you. I'm very excited about this because of some of the stuff that we talked about. And I don't think I've ever done this category that we're coming up with right here, right now. But I would like for you to pick three, like, horror or just general, like, bad, scary adversaries from a movie. Three that you would like to have to take your chances with. Listen, you're not going to get killed in this MASH alternate universe world I'm bringing. But I'm saying, like, you know, for example, like, part of me wants to take on Freddy Krueger because I loved Dream Warriors when I was a kid. And I was like,
best
kids
movie.
Can fight back. You know what I mean? So he would probably be on my list. I probably wouldn't put Jaws on my list because I loved Jaws so much that I still am one of those people who's like, I'm kind of afraid of being killed by a shark.
Me too.
With all love and respect to sharks, I think they're wonderful and amazing and strange and great and prehistoric and terrific. But when I am in the ocean, I'm definitely like, I mean, I could, what's stopping me from being killed by a shark right now? Even though I know the chances are really slim. So I probably wouldn't pick Jaws. So I'm looking for three like adversaries in a, like scary adversaries that we're going to that you would like to take your chances against in this alternate MASH universe that we're creating. And you're going to win, but
okay.
Who would you like to take on?
I take on Pennywise from the It movies.
Ooh, yeah, he deserves it.
Take on Pennywise. I actually want to go old school with Carrie White's mother, Margaret White, and this is from the movie Carrie. Yeah. Margaret is a, you know, certifiably insane person.
Is that Piper Laurie?
Piper Laurie, who thought she was making a comedy when she made the movie. True story. Shocked that she got nominated for an Oscar.
Wait, what? How do you make it onto the set and still think you're making a comedy? That's amazing.
She hadn't done a movie in like 15 years. Like she had a kid and she kind of was off the grid. And she thought it was so outlandish. That
Fair enough.
And Sissy Spacek is just totally in character all the time.
Yes.
She was just like, oh, this is a comedy, of course.
That's an amazing story. I'm really glad that I got to hear you tell me that. Okay, Carrie's mom, 1,000%, great choice. What's number three?
Number three, I'm going to say William Zabka, just any movie he's done. He's the 80s villain. Even though I love the Netflix series of Cobra Kai.
I know, he's so good love at Cobra Kai. Oh, what a great and unexpected. Yeah, but 80s version, infuriating version, fantastic. Could not love that category more. You just absolutely stuck the landing. That's beautiful. Next category, let's do three. I'm going to keep the movie thing going. Three movies that you would love to be able to jump into and just be in whenever you want. You're not reliving the plot. You're just in that world that has been built for you in that movie.
Oh my God. I want to be in Young Frankenstein.
Yes.
Because that's, to me, the funniest movie ever made. Ugh. I think Madeline Kahn was just a comedy genius.
Phenomenal. Huge hero for me, for sure.
She could do everything.
Yes.
Okay, so other movies, I'm trying to think of like my favorite. Oh, what do I love? I love Tombstone. Maybe Tombstone.
Great.
Because Val Kilmer, Val Kilmer at his hottest.
Yeah.
And
we make fun of guys for having mustaches in real life, but it's surprising how often we love a character that an actor has played who has like an old timey mustache. I'm just saying. I like a mustache.
Yeah. Oh, Moonstruck. I want to be a Moonstruck.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, beautiful. Next category. Let's do three foods that in this reality either it's, you know, eating too much of it makes you feel sick or you're allergic to it or you feel like it's ecologically irresponsible or maybe it's something you had once in a land far away and you've never quite been able to recapture like the glory of whatever that morsel was. In this reality, you can have three foods whenever you want. It's not the only thing you're eating, but you can have access to three foods whenever you want. Snap of your fingers, eat it as much as you want. Zero ramifications to you or anyone else. Three.
I'm going to be basic, but anything with bacon. I do like me some bacon.
Nothing wrong with basic or bacon. Fantastic.
Pizza.
Great.
The time I was in Venice, Italy, I was only been one time, but the gelato from Venice. Oh, I dream about it.
Wonderful. I did the first time I think I had, but I've only been to Italy once also. And we were in Florence and I was shooting dinner in a movie and my co-host was eating gelato and was like, I want a shirt made out of this material. I was like, yeah, you kind of do. Like, it's so silky that you're like, can I wear this?
Who was your co-host on that show?
Paul Gilmartin.
I love Paul Gilmartin.
Yeah. He's a dear.
He is. I had that
cookbook.
One of
the funniest people off the cup I've ever.
Oh, so quick. Yeah. I had that cookbook from Dinner in a Movie.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yes.
I've got that cookbook. Yeah. Yeah. I loves me my Dinner in a Movie family, which I extend out to Lisa and Annabelle, even though they came before me. Okay. Next category, romance. It's a MASH game. We got to get some in there. Give me three people. They could be characters from books, actors from movies, any age, any era. Whatever you want as a romantic partner for some to all to one night of your alternate universe. Alternate existence. I don't want you to feel like you're married to this person if you don't want to be.
Okay, Brendan Fraser. I have a huge crush on Brendan Fraser.
Great.
The guy from The Bear. I'm always forgetting his name. And he's from Brooklyn. the show The Bear?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. It's like
is it on your list?
Saving that for after Sketchfest. Enjoy and binge. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. And
I'm sure I will.
And let's just say old school, Paul Newman.
Great. Great, great, great. Okay. All right, awesome. All right, three bands that wrote a song about you. Now, people may not know this because it may have been in the past or it may be today or it may be tomorrow, but three bands that you're like, oh, you didn't know that Van Halen has a song about me called Margo?
Yeah.
That talks about how awesome I am? So give yourself three bands that write a song for you.
I'm going to say Stevie Nicks.
Because
you remind me of Stevie Nicks. I have a picture of Stevie Nicks over my desk, and I'm looking at you, and I look at
Wait,
her.
Wait, I remind you of Stevie Nicks?
Yes.
What a compliment.
Yeah.
I mean, love
seriously.
Stevie.
Yeah. When I move, I'll show you.
I'm very flattered.
Stevie Nicks, Van Halen, of course.
Yes.
And let's say Prince. We mentioned Prince before.
Yeah. Great idea. Great, great, great. I desperately want to hear each of these songs now, by the way. Okay, let's do three places in the world where you would love to have a getaway home, and we can sort of teleport you there so you don't have to worry about the distance. It doesn't matter if you've actually been there or not.
Sydney, Australia.
Great.
Dublin, Ireland.
Wonderful.
And San Francisco.
Okay. Let's do three collaborations that you get to do with an artist. It could be a painter, it could be a filmmaker, or a composer.
Weird Al.
Podcaster, anything. Oh,
I want to write a song with Weird Al.
Speaking of MTV, Al TV was like a highlight of my childhood for sure.
His songs are white and nerdy. He's legitimately great.
Yeah.
He's legitimately
great. When he quote unquote took over MTV and it was Al TV on the whenever, my dad has that all on videotape still. But he did played When Doves Cry, and I can't now think of the video without thinking of the end of the video happening, and then it like fades from the end of the video into a steamy room where Al gets out of the bathtub and reaches towards the camera, and then from off camera someone hands him a robe and he's like, thanks. Anyway,
he's the best.
Amazing. Weird Al. Love it. Love it. Love it. Okay.
Karina Longworth. She's a podcaster,
yeah.
Film historian.
Oh, yeah. Must remember this.
Must remember this. I'd love to.
Wonderful.
With her. And let's say Stephen King.
I can see that happening for sure.
Yeah.
And Stephen King. Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. I know I've already we've talked so much about Stephen King, and we even have Carrie's mom and Pennywise in here, but I'm going to go ahead and throw you into three Stephen King books. So three Stephen King books that you would like to go into for one reason or another.
I have to go into The Stand, even though it's like incredibly a weird place to want to land. But it's one of my favorite books.
Yeah. Great.
So
great.
The Stand, Stand By Me, the original story.
Great.
I love that. And then
which I guess is called The Body. Is that my
body.
Brain is telling me it was called The Body, the short story? Okay.
You're right. It's
I'm
four
just
seasons.
Reminding myself of that.
Yeah. And then I'm reading Fairy Tale right now. This is his newest book, and it's really good.
Yeah, I listened to it as an audiobook.
Me too.
I really enjoyed it.
It's great.
I mean, it went down quick. It was like,
he's really good.
Like with everything he does. Yeah. It just flew by.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. All right. Give me a word that you would use to describe your your feelings about your dreams last night, your scary dreams.
Disturbed.
Great. Okay. All right. This is the time when I use that word to come up with your 100% guaranteed MASH alternate universe world and future. It is also a perfect time for you to lay out for the wonderful people listening to this podcast who may not be familiar, some of your many things, some of your many projects, podcasts, the book, all that good stuff. Can you please tell everyone about that stuff here?
Yeah, so I just wrote my first book. It's called Filmed in Brooklyn. It was my COVID project. I spent 2 years. I watched over 250 films that are based in Brooklyn, filmed in Brooklyn. I took many of the images that you see in the book, and it's from History Press, and I'm super proud of it. That's once again Filmed in Brooklyn. You can follow me at Brooklyn Fitchick, Twitter, Instagram. That's my site. And I have podcasts. I have Book versus Movie. I have What a Creep. And I have Dorking Out, and they're all kind of like pop culture related, and I'm they're super fun. And I'm also on the TikTok. I'm trying to trend.
Good
it's
for
at,
you. Good
at
for
Mark
you.
O'Donoghue.
God, I flirted with that over and over and then just completely, like, I do one video for in a year and I'm like, I did a video!
I just have to force myself. You know, your phone will, there's like something on my iPhone that like makes really good movies and I put that up there. I'm also like into cats. So my Instagram is just everything I work on at Brooklyn Fitchick, and I have the cutest cats in Brooklyn. They're named Sweet Sarah and Tennessee, and they're amazing. And I've been in this apartment since 1995. I have a rent stabilized apartment, which is like,
oh, very nice.
Girl, you don't leave those when you get them. Like, you just, yeah, you stay right put. And that is, yeah. And that's pretty much it. That's me in a nutshell.
Well, that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. And I have some results for you that I think you're going to feel pretty good about. Disturbed though you may have felt about your dreams. I want to first, well, listen, we're talking about your beautiful rent-controlled apartment in Brooklyn. Let's go ahead and add a beautiful house in Dublin, Ireland to that we can just send you to. Maybe even there's a magical door inside of your apartment there that just takes you right into your house in Dublin. So congratulations on that. That is a huge achievement. I also want to congratulate you on your collaboration with Ms. Karina Longworth. Cannot wait to see how both of your wonk minds, and I mean that in the most complimentary way, combine together and form a powerhouse of collaboration. So I'm very, very excited about that. And I'm going to say you deserve it because you took good care of ending the life of Carrie's mom.
I threw kitchen knives.
She's out of here. There's your comedy, Piper Laurie. Done and dusted. We've got that achievement. We also can send you into Moonstruck whenever you want. You can just be in that place. One of the most romantic movies of all time. Mm-hmm. Quite delightful. You can go there. Whether you're there, whether you're in Dublin, whether you're right there in Brooklyn, you can have all the Venetian or Italian gelato that you want at any given time with zero ramifications. So just enjoy that. Maybe make a shirt out of the material that is gelato. Feel free. You also have a fantastic song written about you by none other than Stevie Nicks, which is huge. I'm sure you like to lean back into the crook of Paul Newman's arm as you're listening to the song that Stevie Nicks has written about you. And if you want, you can take them with you. Look, you can go in on your own, but you also have the ability to jump into Fairy Tale whenever you want. And if memory serves, I would want to spend a lot of time with that dog. I mean, he really knew what he was doing when he made a dog one of the main characters.
Yeah.
So good. Is that everything? I think it is. Moonstruck, yeah, Mom, Carrie's Mom, goodbye, double. Yeah, that is your 100% guaranteed MASH alternate universe life.
I love it. Thank you so much. That was amazing.
That's a get. You did that. Everyone, I hope everyone is having a safe and happy beginning of the year here. Hope to see some of you at Sketchfest. And Margot, you've given people so much amazing stuff to check out if they haven't already. I want to thank you so much for doing the podcast. It's been a joy.
I love talking to you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yay. Bye, everybody. I'll talk to you next week. Nice. Oh, that was great. I'm so excited you got me.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers? Bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should move someplace new.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.